Thank you. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay. So I'm actually going to start with smudging. So hopefully you can see the smoke arising. And just as you settle, often when we think of smudging, we think of smudging of removing negative energies. Yeah. But actually, smudging. When we smudge, it's really to help bring us back into union, into integration. So really just have the sense of just as I burn this smudge of you just settling so that you can come back into harmony, into integration. So just settling. Just know as you just watch the smudge, the smoke is just allowing it to just get rid of all those cobwebs so that you can come back into integration. As we today reflect on our ancestors. And I really want you to begin to reflect on yourself because we are all future ancestors. We forget this. We forget the teaching of impermanence that we are all future ancestors. And we are sandwiched in between three generations of ancestors behind us. And three generations of ancestors in front of us. So I really want you to surrender to your chair, surrender to your seat, close your eyes, or you can keep your eyes open and really tune into what it is that you are experiencing right now as we enter into this practice, reflection of our ancestors. So really allowing yourself to relax, surrender. And perhaps before you fully relax and surrender, you do not have to call up your biological ancestors. Because as I said, we have affinity ancestors who are just as important as the bio ancestors. And when I say affinity ancestors, you know, for me, an affinity ancestor could be Martin Luther King or Nelson Mandela. Yeah. Harriet Tubman. For me, these are my ancestors. Yeah. And we've all got affinity ancestors. It may be a teacher or a friend who has passed. They are an affinity ancestors and they are just as important. So really inviting you to just relax and just trust what emerges. Really see if you can get yourself out of the way and trust what emerges. You may be surprised who will come to you in this moment. So surrender. Really, just knowing that we are our ancestors' wildest imagination. And many of you may have heard this and maybe think, oh, this is so cliched. Yeah, and actually, it's not cliched. I know for me, I'm my ancestors' wildest imagination, wildest dream, because the people who came before me did not have the privileges that I have. Living in this world today, didn't have the privileges that I have being an African descent person of enslaved people, didn't have the privileges of being queer, those people who were queer, of all races who were queer, yeah, being in a female body. So I am my ancestors' wildest imagination because we know that those people before us really hoped that we could have some freedom. Yeah. And of course, we really hope that things will change for the generations to come after us. We hope that the climate, you know, with climate change, that we will be able to save the planet. So in 100 years time, if that planet is still existing, those people, they will be our wildest imagination. So just have gratitude for this, yes, that we are our ancestors' wildest imagination, wildest dream. And we don't have to think, oh, about our bio relatives, if that is too activating, too traumatizing. Yeah. Because we have many ancestors. So let's connect to the ancestors of the generation of our parents. And even, you know, if you've got parents living, there are still ancestors that have passed from that generation. You know, even if your parents are like in your 30s or 40s, because people can have children young, people die at all ages. So just having a sense of those ancestors having your back. Yeah. Have the sense of those ancestors having your back. Yeah. And just lean into those ancestors having your back. Yeah. And while I too will lean into the generation of my parents, and just knowing that there are people who I may not know who have my back. I'm gonna lean into the generation of our grandparents, and just knowing that there are people who have passed over in that generation who have our back. And it could be bio ancestors, it could be affinity ancestors. And just know that there are some ancestors, bio or affinity, that need quarantining. Yeah. So, you know, we can quarantine some of those people in history that need quarantining. Okay. All right. And we can quarantine some of those bio relatives that we had that need to go into quarantine. Okay. So don't worry, just put them in quarantine so that you can allow that generation of our grandparents to have our back, and just know that they've got our back. And now, moving into our great-grandparents. Yeah. Great-grandparents. Just be open to whatever emerges, and it doesn't matter what ancestor comes from any generation, but just knowing that they have our back. They've got our back. Yeah. Just know they've got our back. And breathe. And breathe. And then just knowing that the earth is our ancestor. So feeling the support of the earth. Remember, the Buddha Shakyamuni reached down to the earth goddess, the god earth goddess, his ancestor, who is our ancestor, to ask for help. So we can ask these ancestors for help. We can often say, what would you do in this time? Yeah, what would you do in this situation I'm in? And we just allow our minds to be open and see what arises. So just know that the earth is our ancestor. Yeah, which is why we need to take care of the earth. When we take care of the earth, we take care of the wind element, we take care of the fire element, we take care of the water element. And when we do that, we are taking care of ourselves, because we are earth. wind, fire, and water. Yes. And now, let's lean back into that Dharma lineage. And if you're not Buddhist, just lean back into your Dharma lineage. I'm Buddhist, and I'm going to lean back into that Dharma lineage of the Buddha Shakyamuni, of the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, the queer trans Avalokiteshvara Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva Green Tara. Lean back into some of the Buddhas of Vajrasattva, of Amitabha. Leaning back into some of the teachers like Atisha, Hakuin, Milarepa. Yeah. Leaning back into the three Buddhas. Yes. The present Buddha, Shakyamuni. The past Buddha, Dipankara. And the future Buddha, Maitreya. Yes. And allowing yourself to lean back and be held. And just know, when you allow yourself to be supported by these ancestors, just knowing that they've got your back, that they're holding you, that the earth is supporting you, we can be in a position to leave a legacy for those generations that come after us. And there are generations that are alive that will come after us. And just know, whatever we do, it impacts those children, those young people on the streets. It impacts us. You know, whether we work in a supermarket and a young person comes in and sees how we are, it impacts them. Whether you work in the media and they see you on television, you're impacting that young generation. If you're a politician, you're impacting that young generation. And if you are, all of us are human beings walking along the streets, when that generation that's going to come after us, that is alive right now, those who are being born, those young people, they see how we are on the streets. And we impact them. So we, as future ancestors, leave a legacy. So breathe. And remember, you are your ancestors' wildest imagination. And for us to have hope for the next generations to come after us. And breathe. And know that those next generations that come after us are not necessarily just bio, okay? Some of you might think, well, I don't have children and my line ends with me and I don't have ancestors who are going to come after me. We are interconnected. Anybody who comes after us, it's connected to us, all of us, yeah, will have generations of ancestors that are connected to this line, to our line, yeah. We are a future ancestor, and we, at some point, will be holding another generation. We will be holding their back. But right now, leaning into the ancestors who have our back. And let me just not say anything right now so you can connect to whoever emerges for you right now. They've got your back. And having gratitude for our ancestors so that we could be born at a time when we have different freedoms from them. And also acknowledging, of course, there is more freedom for each and every one of us, no matter what body you were born into, what race or gender you were born into or transitioned into. Yeah. There is still more freedoms for us to have, and we may not benefit, we most probably will not benefit from those freedoms. And we can leave a legacy so that those ancestors that come after us will have more freedoms. And just remember, every day we breathe, we are supported by the ancestor of Mother Earth. Mother Earth, that gives us the wind element, the fire element, the water element, and knowing at some point we will decompost back into Mother Earth. And we will be part of the earth that will give generations to come the wind, the water, the fire, the earth. Amaho. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Peace, peace, peace. So gently, just knowing that we're still being held, and gently, yeah, just gently doing whatever it is that you need to be doing. And it's also an invitation if anybody would like to put anything into the chat right now, please do, if you would like to write something into the chat right now. Okay, I know sometimes that this practice, even myself, can just really feel that there's some movement going on, some integration going on. So on this theme of ancestors, it's really important in the Buddhist tradition. In some of the Buddhist traditions, we talk about refuge tree. And the refuge tree really acknowledges those people who have brought the teachings to us. Yeah. Who brought the teachings to us so that we can find liberation and freedom. And let's just talk a little bit about liberation and freedom, because when we think about liberation and freedom, or when I think about liberation and freedom, I do think about our ancestor, the Buddha Shakyamuni, who found freedom. Yeah, found freedom. And actually, it's really interesting in a way. We could perhaps see how actually the prince when he was assailed by the Lord Mara, that actually that was an ancestor. It was also a state of mind, but also an ancestor who was able to finally quarantine so he could connect to the ancestor, the earth goddess. Yeah. And so sometimes we need to quarantine and put people into quarantine who sabotage our freedom and our liberation. And I'm going to tell a few stories. I don't know how many stories we'll get through, but I'm going to tell a few stories to really help us have more freedom and liberation. And I think for me, freedom and liberation is, how can we have freedom when somebody activates us? How can we have freedom when somebody triggers us? Yeah. How can we have freedom when somebody just is in complete disagreement with us? How can we have freedom from our childhoods? You know, many people are still struggling with the past, with the childhoods. And I say, what if you said so what to your past? What if you never told anyone anything about your past? I think about this. What, you know, when people say, who are you, etc., and when we meet new people, we get intimate, and it's so important to tell them who we are. And what if we didn't tell people about our past? Yeah. How much of the past are we still blaming? Yeah. Hmm. So, let me tell you this story. I tried to find if it was a sutta or not, and I can't find the sutta. But it's a story which has been connected to the Buddha. But whether it was a story connected to the Buddha or not, the story is a really important story. Yeah. So there was a restless businessman who once came into the Buddha's assembly and walked straight to him and spat in the Buddha's face. Can you imagine somebody spitting in your face? This businessman was so furious that his children could have spent their time earning money instead of sitting with the Buddha. So this businessman is enraged because he wants his children to make lots of money, because basically he sees these children as his future ancestors. These children are going to look after him when he dies, and he is just furious. And what did the Buddha do? The Buddha just merely smiled at him. There was no word, there was no reaction. Can you imagine somebody spitting in your face and not having a word or reaction? I'm definitely not there yet. Anyway, the man walked away in a huff. He was shocked. So shocked that it actually disturbed his sleep. He couldn't sleep at night. And for the first time, he met someone who smiled when he spat at them, because this was something he did, you know. It's like spitting in the Buddha's face isn't going to be the first time. If you're somebody who spits, this is something you've done and you've managed to get away with it. Anyway, this businessman was so discombobulated that actually he found himself going back to the Buddha and fell at the Buddha's feet and said, please, please forgive me. I didn't know what I did. So really, this is the impact of the Buddha not reacting was such a huge teaching for this person, okay? And he's begging, please, please, please forgive me. And guess what the Buddha said? The Buddha said, no, no, I can't excuse you. And of course, some of you might be really surprised right now, just as the assembly was taken aback, because this businessman did it in front of the Buddha's assembly, did it in front of all the people that the Buddha was teaching. And so, of course, everybody in that assembly was going to think, of course the Buddha's going to say, I forgive you. But the Buddha didn't. The Buddha said, why should I forgive you when you have done nothing wrong? Why should I forgive you when you have done nothing wrong? And the businessman reminds him and says, I said, well, the previous day, I I spat in your face. And a Buddha replied, oh, that person is not here now. If I ever meet the person you spat on, I'll tell him to excuse you. To this person here, you've done nothing wrong. Now this, to me, is such a huge teaching, because I know for myself that once upon a time, I was so identified with the past that I thought I was still that young person who was abused, who was sexually abused, who was physically abused, who was mentally abused. I still thought I was this person. But actually, that person doesn't exist anymore. This is me now. And nobody is physically abusing me or sexually abusing me or mentally abusing me. Yeah. And so this is such a strong practice. Yeah. So it's something for us to reflect on. How can we get to this point of letting go of the identification of the past? Sometimes I hear people say, you know, my parents were like that, so I'm going to be like that. Yeah. Or that's what my parents did, so I'm going to do that to that next generation. And there is real freedom to be able to look at the past and say, so what? Where is the person who was beaten? Where is the person who was abused, who was bullied now? Can you find them? That's the question. Can you really find the person who was beaten, who was bullied, who was assaulted, who was traumatized? Can you find them now? Where are they? Yeah. So this is an important teaching from our ancestor. So I just encourage you to write that question down for you as we move on to another story. It's such a whole story, but another story. Let's talk about impermanence. Yeah. Because I know I had a friend who said to me, a good friend of mine, when she was a lot younger, she had a major death. Her partner dropped down dead when she was in her 20s. And she went to a Buddhist counsellor. And of course, the Buddha was just the Buddhist counselor, not the Buddha, but this counselor who was Buddhist informed, just really gave her the teachings. Everything is impermanent. Everything is impermanent. And my friend said, I just couldn't go there. I just couldn't go there with this teaching. Everything is impermanent. So this is a beautiful teaching. So this is one of our ancestors, Marpa. Marpa comes from the 10th century, was around at the same time as Milarepa. Marpa was somebody who was considered to be enlightened, was a family man, a farmer, and had returned to Tibet from India. And Marpa had a son called Dharmadoa Dodo, who wanted to see the world. Children want to see the world, just like Shakyamuni, the prince, wanted to see the world. Yeah. And however, a psychic had informed Marpa that actually maybe this isn't a good thing, this is quite dangerous. And so Marpa warned his son not to go out to festivities. Yeah, but, you know, as children, who listens to their parents when they want to go out and party and they want to go out and have a good time? Yeah. And so that's what the son did. He went out into festivities, went out into town having a really good time. People were surprised to see Marpa's son out having a good time because they thought, oh, he's just going to be like Marpa. He's going to be an enlightened teacher. But what we do know is that at some point, there were people who found the boy dead. Yeah. In fact, they say it was Milarepa who actually first came across Marpa's son. Yeah. And so Marpa's son head was covered in silk, put on a stretcher, and carried home to Marpa. Yeah. And Marpa came out to meet his disciples, and he was told, your son is dead. And Marpa just fell into a deep, deep coma. You could actually say Marpa fell into the dark night of the soul. He laid his son's head on his lap and just wept and wept and wept. Yeah. Just kept on weeping. Yeah. And of course, the mother of the child, she too was completely distressed. She cried, she fainted. And Marpa was completely distressed. Yeah. Even though he sang songs to clarify the teachings for the present, to help transfer his son's consciousness into higher planes, he still cried out and wept and wept and wept and wept. And people far around heard Marpa weeping. And there was an elderly couple who had the courage to approach Marpa and said, Lord and Master, When our son died, your eminence explained the Buddhist facts of life concerning the imminence of death, the universality of impermanence, the uncertainty of our lifespan, the ceaseless cycle of birth, the death and rebirth, the interconnectedness of all things, and many edifying verses formerly unheard by these old ears. You exhorted to us to see that this very life, include parenting a fine son, was just like a dream and an illusion, that we need not squander the rest of this ephemeral life in depression. And we found great peace through your teachings. And Marpa responded, it is true that life is like a dream, a mirage, an illusion. The death of a child is like a nightmare among dreams. It's like a super illusion among illusions. Nothing is more painful than the death of one's child. The intense grief is also unreal and illusory. And Marpa continued to weep. And so for me, this teaching is to remind us, if we are Buddhist practitioners, or if we're practitioners where we really understand that teaching of impermanence. Yeah. If we're really to understand it, that doesn't mean to say that we cannot feel anything. That doesn't mean to say that we cannot weep and cry when a child dies, or when a parent dies, or when a close friend dies. That doesn't mean to say that we can't weep. Of course. Because anybody in our lives are illusory. They are illusions. And of course, we are going to feel the pain. Yes. And it's okay to feel the pain. And at some point, we will move on. But we have to allow ourselves to feel the pain of impermanence. Even if it's the pain of letting go of a compulsive behavior or an addictive behavior. Because these are illusory things in our life. They're like friends to us. And when we let go, of course there is the pain. We have to have the pain to move on. Yeah. So remember, it's so important to feel the pain. Our ancestor, the Buddha Shakyamuni, reminds us of this. You know, the Buddha didn't vow to find enlightenment. That would have been the blissful way, the blissful way. The Buddha vowed to find an end of suffering, and to find the end of suffering, we have to face the suffering, we have to face the pain, yeah, before we can move through to this. So, just thinking, time, one more. Well, let's do one about, the short one about teacher, which comes from the Vasali Sutta, it always makes me laugh. This is another great Buddhist teacher who comes from Tibet, and he was traveling back to Tibet to take the teachings back to Tibet. And he was told, you know what, a teacher, when you go to Tibet, all the people are so good natured, they're so flexible, they're so open. Yeah, you're going to have a great time. You're going to have a fantastic time when you go to Tibet, because people are so loving, they're so kind. And so what did a teacher do? He thought, well, how am I going to keep on practicing if all these people are so loving and kind? How am I going to keep on practicing? You know, who's going to push my buttons? I need my buttons pushed so that I can keep on practicing. And so he chose to bring along his most ill-tempered tea boy, his most ill-tempered person to serve him, to go along to Tibet, because he felt that was the only way he could stay awake. It's the only way that he could keep his practice alive. And of course, you know, we sometimes say, oh, you know, these people are so lovely. I love it when, you know, when I visit this country, people are so warm, they're so wonderful. But of course, when he got there, he realized that he didn't have to bring the tea boy along, that not everybody was pleasant, as he had been told. And so, you know, for me, it's to remember there's two teachings about this. It's that actually, when we have people in our lives that trigger us and we go into conflict, it's okay, because it brings our practice alive. I know recently I went into conflict with somebody and I just gave myself a bad time, and I've got to make it right, and how can I make it okay, and how can I... And actually realizing this is a teaching. This is allowing me to practice, and it really is for me to reflect on myself and reflect how I am and to continue practicing. So not to think, oh my God, I'm in conflict, what am I doing wrong, and giving yourself a bad time. Of course, if we're constantly in conflict with people and this is dominating our lives, conflict after conflict, then we might have to really think what's going on in our lives and paying attention to our ethical practice. And even so, even with this one conflict, myself is like paying attention to my ethical practice. So as we say, that cliche that, you know, these people who trigger us are our teachers, and they really are our teachers. I'm just going to do one more story. Yeah. The Angulimala story, because for me this is a really important story of, important story of changing our lives, yeah. Because sometimes we change our lives, we change our ways, and we can still be resentful, okay, with how society treats us. So Angulimala, many of you will know the story of Angulimala. Angulimala actually means the garlanded one. So Angulimala was once called Ahimsaka. And I may have got the pronunciation incorrect, but anyway, Ahimsaka was his name. And he was an excellent student, okay? He was an excellent student. So much so that actually many of his peers were jealous of him. They were jealous because the guru treated Ahimsaka differently, because he was such the perfect student. And we know how that is. It's like, wow, you know, it's favouring this one person, and what about us? And so his peers ganged up on him. And what they did was they were actually really deceitful. And they went to the guru and told the guru, you know what? You know your favoured one, Ahimsaka? Well, he's sleeping with your wife. Yeah. Yeah, he's sleeping with your wife. And guess what? He actually thinks he's more enlightened to you. He actually thinks that he's the wise one. And so, of course, well, we wonder how awake this guru was, because the guru went into a rage. He became so angry with rage. So angry with rage. Yeah. And he insisted, he casted Ahimsaka out and insisted that Ahimsaka have a penance and said, the only way I'm going to forgive you is if you bring me back 1,000 fingers of 1,000 victims. So can you imagine? This was a dark night of the soul for Ahimsaka. So much so he went and lived in the forest, but at some point he just brought himself to doing this because he wanted the love back of his guru. And he actually, pounced on people going through the forest. And he managed to murder 999 people. And people in the community were so upset. They said to the king, you've got to do something. He's hanging out in the forest. It's not safe for us to go in the forest. What are you going to do? And so the king sent people out to kill Ahimsaka. He got the name Angulimala because of this, you know, the fingers around his neck. Anyway, the mother heard about it, and, you know, mothers protect their children. And so she rushed out to warn Angulimala. And the Buddha heard of it, and the Buddha knew that actually, if the mother caught up with her son, that the son would have killed his mother. And the Buddha really wanted to save him from this. And so the Buddha goes into the forest. And at some point, Angulimala spots the Buddha. And he starts chasing the Buddha, but he can't keep up with the Buddha. He goes faster, the Buddha goes faster, and he just can't keep up with the Buddha. And so, with rage, he demands, stop! Stop! And the Buddha smiles, turns round to Angulimala and smiles and says, Angulimala, I have stopped. I have stopped. It's you who should stop. And in that moment, he got the teaching, and Angulimala fell to the feet of the Buddha and begged for forgiveness. And he became an arahant. He did become enlightened. But let me remind you that, of course, he changed his ways. But there were people out there who weren't going to forgive him. When he went for alms, he got attacked by angry people. Yeah. People would throw rocks at him. Yeah. That didn't stop people's anger, because they were still in their rage. They didn't know how to come to peace with this. But yet, somehow Angulimala was able to be at peace with this and just knew, it's like, okay, my actions have had consequences. And just, I actually made a mistake. The story of a teacher isn't the Vasali Sutta. The Vasali Sutta is another sutta, and I won't go into that because I really want to have time for some questions. But the Vasali Sutta, what I would say is that even the Buddha made a mistake. So you can look up the Vasali Sutta, which is spelled V-E-S-A-L-I. So those are some of the stories of our ancestors. Again, that story of Angulimala is also a teaching to remind us, no matter what we have done, we can still wake up. Yeah, we can move on from the past, okay? We don't have to be trapped by the past. Yes, those people who are still angry with us, they're still trapped by the past, and we can't prevent that. But we can wake up and have peace and be peaceful around our actions. And there are people in prison who get to that point, who really get to that point and change their ways and know that there will be people who won't forgive them, and yet they can be at peace and wake up. Okay, let's see if there are any questions. I know that there was some stuff, some things going on. I did invite you to write into the chat. There's a person who needs quarantining while alive. Yes, we can quarantine people while we're alive. And one of the things that I'd actually say is that those people that we quarantine while we're alive, if we're not ready to bring them into our heart minds, It may be that when they pass, we're able to put them in our practice of metta, in the enemy practice. And what I would say is I quarantined my biological mother for many years, and then began to put her in the enemy stage of the metta. And now I'm at this place where it's like when she comes to mind, I can really wish her well. And that's it. Because often those people that we're quarantining, often we don't want to wish them well. And that doesn't give peace for us. But it's a journey to get there. And so quarantining them, it can be a really good place. And just knowing it could just be a practice of when they come to mind, just wish them well. Yeah, even before we put them in our metta. This is so powerful in giving me a sense of the bigger picture, the longer game. I grew up in a time when things felt like they were getting better for many people, though not for everyone. And there was a great empowerment of sense of hope that we could make a better future. Now it feels as though all that's been broken, and the future will be about trying to stop things from going really bad too. Thank you. Yeah, this can get me down. I don't always do so well holding that sense, but this exercise allows me to reach back into the past. Well done. Where there was suffering that was overcome generation by generation, well done. And to the future where even it takes generations to fix things, it does. It will be worth it for the many people who can live better lives because of it. Thank you. Yeah. So do we have any, do we have any questions? Do we have any questions, my host? Are there any questions?
I didn't see any in the chat yet or the ask a question area, but everyone could feel free to post them now.
Okay. Well, let me just, questions might come. There's a lot. I think there's a lot that I've shared, and just perhaps reminding us of the, you know, sharing the story of the businessman, and just how reminding us that what happened to us in the past, that person isn't here now. Yeah, that person was in the past, which is a really strong teaching. And then, of course, the story of Marpa, of just knowing that when people die close to us, whether we're yogic practitioners or Buddhist practitioners, that of course it's okay to have the pain. Of course, we can't spiritually bypass that, and we are going to feel the pain. And then reminding us of the story of a teacher, reminding us that when we are in conflict with somebody, it doesn't have to be a bad thing, and that something has gone wrong. It's a real opportunity for us to practice to do something different. Yeah. And then, of course, the story of Angulimala. Yeah, the story of Angulimala, where we can change no matter what we've done in our past. It is possible to change. And for us to remember that actually we may be in relationship with people in our lives, or could be even in our families, who have done things which have been very hard for us to come into relationship with, and these people have changed, and can we, although we know that they've changed, that we may still have anger towards them, but to also know that they have changed. And that's a koan in itself, to really have anger and frustration towards somebody and know that they've changed at the same time. And maybe I will share the Vasali
Sutta. I'm sorry to interrupt you. There is one question that's very popular. It's, can you elaborate on the concept of quarantine and how this is actually done in practice?
Okay, so when we quarantine somebody, that means that we don't completely push them out of our lives, but we actually just say, I'm not ready to deal with this person. I'm not ready to come into relationship with this person. I'm not even really ready to think about being metaphor and compassionate with them, and that really is okay. Yeah. And when I'm ready, I will come to you. Yeah. And then also those ancestors have passed. Just know that those ancestors are doing the work. That ancestors that have done things that have been really harmful, that actually they are doing the work in the ether. Just trust in that. And also just knowing I'm just not ready. And these are not the people who've got my back. Okay. These, you know, these aren't the people who I want to have my back, and they don't have my back. Yeah. So that's what I would say. And then if these ancestors begin to pop into your head, you know, at the unexpected time, just wish them well, and they will just go back into quarantine. You don't have to go into conversation with them. You don't have to go into dialogue with them. Just wish them well. I see you and goodbye. Okay, that's all. I see you and goodbye. Okay. Can I repeat quickly what happened to the Buddha in the forest? What happened is the Buddha goes into the forest to find Angulimala so that he can reach Angulimala before his mother reaches him, because he knows that the Angulimala, if the mother reaches him, he will kill his mother to get that thousand finger. Yeah. And so when Angulimala catches sight of the Buddha, he starts chasing the Buddha because he's going to kill the Buddha. That's it. This is the person. He doesn't care. He's going to take that finger. And the Buddha keeps on moving, and Angulimala can't keep up with him. He just even if Angulimala goes faster, the Buddha goes faster, and he can't keep up with him. And Angulimala says, "Stop, stop." And the Buddha turns round to Angulimala and smiles and says, "I have stopped, Angulimala." And what he means by this is, I have stopped murdering people. I've stopped killing people. I have stopped being unskillful. That's what he means. He says, I have stopped. Because if you go to the Jataka stories and you go into the past lives of the Buddha, that, yeah, there were unskillful things that he did in his past life. So he's saying, I have stopped. It's you who needs to stop. It's us. We need to stop. We need to stop being unskillful. So I hope that answers your question. Yeah, about the holidays. Any tips for living well during the holidays? I would say, really, I'm pretty sure Sangha Live will be running over the holidays. So I'd really say be in community in healthy spaces. Yeah. So if you're somebody who's struggling with habitual addictive behaviors, go on to the Buddhist Recovery Network and see what meetings are happening. Yeah. And go to them. There'll be many online, or you can go into the 12-step community and see what's happening. If you're somebody who doesn't connect or relate to having addictive or compulsive behaviors, just see which sanghas are offering teachings over the holidays. And the one thing that I will say is that, remember, when we get on the plane, we're told to put the mask on ourselves first before we put the mask on anybody else. And so that teaching is, take care of yourself. What is it that you need to do to take care of yourself over the holidays? If you really feel like going to your family is going to really activate you and completely discombobulate you, maybe you'll need to miss going. You know, you might have to weigh up what's going to be more traumatic, you not going, or you not going and some people being upset that you don't go, or you going and you getting completely discombobulated. So you're going to have to make the choice. But, you know, during the holidays, just also just treat it. It's just another day. It's an ordinary day. And some people have created this illusion that it's this special day. And actually, it's just another day. It's just another day. And in some parts of the world, people aren't even marking this day. It's just another day. Even New Year, every day is a new year. Yeah, so in a way, reframe it, because I think sometimes when we think it's bigger than what it is, it can get us into a bit of a pickle. So I will stop here. Thank you so much. Just really tuning into my body right now and just encouraging you to tune into your body. And remember, the earth has your back. Yeah. If anything else, remember, the earth has your back. And remember to breathe. Yeah. Okay. I have to leave right now. So just reminding you of Dana. Any Dana that I receive, because we do receive some Dana, I will donate it to my Buddhist Center, as we are actually fundraising right now. So any Dana that comes to me, I will donate to the Buddhist Center. So thank you for your generosity. I don't have the opportunity to thank you after, so I thank you before. Okay then, goodbye.